I think it's fair to say my first guest this morning has been through a very turbulent couple of weeks. He's been in the teeth of a political crisis following the revelations of a massive projected overrun in the new children's hospital. In the midst of all this turmoil, he has also had personal joy. He became a dad for the first time to a little baby girl called Saoirse. Health Minister Simon Harris, you're very welcome.
Morning, Brendan. Thank you very much for having me.
Now, we have a lot to talk about, obviously, and people can rest assured we will get to all of it. But I do want to talk to you about what happened at your house last weekend, this protest or whatever you want to call it. So it was Sunday.
Yeah.
Were you at home?
I was at home. I was on the phone, which is not unusual, in my house. And my wife and 3-week-old baby daughter, Saoirse, were out for a little walk. We live in a little village in Delgany. And as I say, I was on the phone. We were planning on heading out for the afternoon. And my wife came back through the door of our house and said, Simon, something's about to kind of take off outside our house. And I, of course, didn't really know what she meant.
So just to be clear, your wife is coming home from the walk and they were gathering as she was coming back into the house.
And even slightly more, you know, worrying than that, I think my wife and baby had been used to identify where our house was. So it had been clear that...
Were they followed to your house?
Yes. So, I mean, I don't like to talk about it too much, but...
No, but I think
Kiva
this is important
and
it's become a national issue.
So I'm happy to tell
this
you.
This group followed them down to your house.
So it's clear to me that people had a rough idea of where we lived, obviously, but maybe perhaps didn't know specifically what house we lived in. My wife and daughter were out for a walk, and obviously they spotted my wife and watched what house she went back to.
And they knew what your wife looked like?
They must have, because within seconds of my wife coming in the door, they had gathered outside the house. And I suppose...
Was your wife upset coming in the door?
Very, and frightened. And I suppose the most... The thing that keeps on kind of coming back to me a week on from it now is they didn't even know I was at home. So as far as they knew, they had seen, you know, my wife and pushing a buggy with a 3-week-old baby going into the house. And as I say, within seconds, a couple of minutes max of her being back inside the house, they had effectively blocked our driveway. And people will have seen some photographs and the likes, but they effectively stood in front of our
driveway. Did you feel you were trapped in the house then?
There's no doubt we were trapped in our house for the best part of 2 hours. I just felt it was such a violation. I mean, your first job, you know, forget about the job you do, your first job in your home is to protect and mind your family.
And especially at a time like this, it's morning, baby, and it's a wonderful time but can be tender, a delicate time.
We were planning on heading out that afternoon to bring Saoirse to see her grandparents in Wexford, and instead we spent the afternoon in our house with the blinds down, on the phone to the Gardaí.
Were you
hoping that
worried
this would
leave. Or were you angry? Or
I was worried. I suppose I felt somewhat guilty, which is a terrible thing to feel, that my job had brought these people to our door. I just want to say this because I've heard people talk about, you know, protesters gathered outside my home, or there was a protest outside my home. This wasn't a protest. Like, I've been on protests and I've been protested at.
But why was it not a protest?
Because this was not a protest. This was a clear attempt to intimidate my family and my neighbours. These were people, some of whom seemed to have travelled quite a distance, who had come to my home on a Sunday afternoon and effectively blocked me in my home with my wife and with my baby. I think it was intimidation and thuggery. I have a number of offices in my constituency. I have a departmental office. I work in the Dáil. There's government buildings. So many places to protest. This coming to your house, coming invading your personal, it felt like a violation. It was a violation.
Well, intimidating you to what end?
Well, I don't know. But the fact, imagine being in your house on a Sunday afternoon and feeling you can't leave. Imagine seeing your wife come in the door of your house with your newborn baby, as upset as she was. Imagine how that would make you feel. It makes you feel angry.
Will I tell you how it would make me feel?
Sure.
And this is probably the difference between you and a lot of other people in terms of why you maybe have the temperament for politics. I'd be out there.
Yeah.
I'd be out there and I'd lose my temper and I'd head out there.
Yeah, so look,
you're not very angry. You don't want to go out and tell these people to, you know, F off or whatever. Did you have to?
I did, of course I did. Of course I did. But I also knew from watching these things in the past on the television and the like, so these things can escalate very quickly. And I knew that the guards would know how to deal with it. And in fairness, the guards did know how to deal with it. And I'm very grateful for how they dealt with it.
You rang the guards?
I did indeed. I did indeed.
But do you need guard protection, do you think?
I don't know, is the honest answer. I've never felt that before. I mean,
Do you know?
Now I'm certainly, I'd be certainly more cautious than I would. The fact that on a lovely Sunday afternoon, this can just happen out of the blue, does make you feel more vulnerable. But I do think it's not just about me. I mean, I think what hasn't been talked about this week, Brendan, is these people effectively launched a campaign on my driveway, and it's called Bring It to Their Home. And these are not my words, they're their words. But they called on people to visit the homes of judges, ministers, councillors, TDs. And I don't want to give these people oxygen, but that's what they called on people to do. They called on people to visit other people's homes. And, you know, I've been in the Oireachtas all week working away, and I've been chatting to government colleagues, to opposition colleagues. And, you know, people are saying, well, what if that was my home? So I do think I really welcome the condemnation from across the political divide, from across the media. But I think there's something we're missing here. Why was I targeted last weekend? Why did these people drive from Fingal and drove by presumably other ministers' houses? Well, I think it's partially because of the tone of our discourse. I think it's the fact that we dehumanise politicians. I think it's the fact that we... You know, there's so many things people can criticise me about and so many things I can criticise other people about. And there's so much legitimate political argument. But like when I read in Sunday newspapers phrases like, you know, wanting to torture the health minister and that's the best way to end his career. That's what I read in a Sunday newspaper last weekend. When you hear people talking about you as though you're not a human being.
This was from a political source, right?
Yeah.
And also, like, is it not a political metaphor? Like, are you being a bit oversensitive there?
Well, if you were in my house, I don't think you'd feel it was oversensitive. I think we have to be careful. I think we all have to reflect on our tone. I mean, some of the best political...
So did that upset you?
I suppose I'm looking at it now from... No, it didn't upset me, is the God's honest answer. But I'm looking at it now.
Okay, so what's the problem then? It's the cut and thrust of politics. So death by a thousand cuts, I think, was a phrase used as well. Really dehumanising you? Is it a political metaphor?
Not about dehumanising just me, right? Dehumanising each other. I mean, some of the best and most robust opponents that I have in Dáil Éireann, they're really good. They're really robust. They never personalise it. And I'm sure, by the way, I'm sure I've crossed this line. I'm sure people could point to examples where I have. So it's not me being holier than thou. I'm thinking, though, that as, you know, condemnation's not enough. I mean, what will we do? Will we condemn what happened at my house last week and then it'll happen at someone else's house and then we'll condemn it again and then we'll condemn it again? Really, we need to be asking ourselves the question as to why are we... We need to make sure we're not legitimising this, that we're not calling it protest, and that we're not suggesting it's in any way acceptable, and that we do remember at the end of the day, you know, if you don't like me, don't vote for me. If you don't like me, run against me in the next election. You know, protest outside my office, you know, or anybody else.
Do you understand why people might be angry with you?
Oh, I understand why there's lots of issues that people could have different views in relation to me. But I also know this, Brendan. The people who stood outside my house last week had signs and lots of different signs. And one of the signs said, you know, they were protesting for the nurses. The Irish Nurses and Midwives Organisation came out and condemned fully what happened in my house. Some of the people said they were protesting in relation to cervical cancer. Some of the people who have been most affected by that, like Vicky Phelan, were sending me supportive texts during this situation. So these people don't represent these causes. They hijack their causes. They hijack their causes. In an effort to bring intimidation and fear to a family. My wife is not a public figure. My three-week-old baby is not a public figure. And my home is my home. And the reason I'm exercised about it is not actually for me. It's happened to me now. It's done in many ways, what happened to my neighbours and my family last weekend. But it's the fact that we can't allow this happen. We can't allow this become in any way acceptable or normal. And that's why I really welcome the condemnation. But I think we have to ask what's at the heart of it.
Okay, before we go on to the issue of the day, just you're talking about politicians being human beings and everything, and of course you are,
news, yeah.
and you have, as you said, a small baby in the house.
Yes,
I'm imagining what was going on for you in the last few weeks. Have you had any time to be a new father, to enjoy that or anything?
So I'm definitely enjoying it, and it adds a whole perspective to your life.
But have you had time?
But I had this romantic notion, perhaps, that I might get a little bit of time to spend with my daughter.
So paternity leave. You're entitled to some paternity leave.
And, you know, I'm a member of a government that we all passed a law to say that, you know, dads should be allowed of 2 weeks. And I knew I was never going to have 2 weeks, and I'm a bit of a workaholic anyway. But I did have this notion that I might actually get to spend a couple of days at home with my daughter and with my wife to support her, what she'd been through. And I suppose it didn't happen. And I think we have to ask ourselves about that. As politicians, we all say, you know, that we want great family-friendly working spaces. But yet, actually, the Dáil still seems to operate on the assumption that politicians are 50 and have their kids raised by the time they come into the place. And that's not the reality. If we want to attract more people into the Dáil, younger people, more women as well, I think we have to look at how we can do politics better. So, like, I was meant to be, and everybody knew it was.
And are you annoyed and upset by that? Because it's particularly your first child is a once in a lifetime.
I'm not annoyed with anyone, but I do have pangs of guilt, you know, in relation to it. I wanted to be there with my daughter. It wasn't a state secret that we'd had a little baby, and, you know, yet I was being called into the health committee to answer questions and being called into the Dáil to answer questions when people knew that we were trying to spend those few days. That's fine, you know, fine. I'm not criticizing people on this. I'm just making the point that they had
to invite you in, didn't they?
No issue in relation to that. But can we not as politicians actually, you know, give each other a little bit of time when that you.
But hang on, do you think they should have cut you some slack with all that was going on? This is the difficulty, isn't it?
I'm not asking for any slack, and this is not about me, and this is not looking for any sort of sympathy, Brendan. I'm just making the point that in other countries they do this. You saw the Prime Minister in New Zealand had a baby. She managed to get a little bit of time off and managed to go back to work. In other countries,
she clearly wasn't trying to build a children's hospital.
That must have been it. So, look, I think we have to ask how do we as more and more young people come into politics, and hopefully more women come in as well, how do we make sure it's a bit more family friendly? I don't think our rhetoric at the moment matches our actions as politicians.
Okay, so kind of extraordinary news yesterday. BAM, the main contractor on the National Children's Hospital, says, okay guys, we're happy to pull out of this contract, facilitate the you ending it. Did you have any idea this was coming?
No, I didn't. And I think can I just make a point in relation to this? Because I read in the statement, you know, the option of retendering the contract. And I suppose what your listeners need to know, I think, is that retendering was an issue considered. So I've been talking a lot over the last week about the three options that were presented to me on the 9th of November, and I've published this document. Option one, pause or cancel the project. Option two, retender the project. Or option three, proceed with the project. And in the note that I published, it said that if we actually went out to tender, in all likelihood, the project would end up costing a lot more.
And we have the front of the Irish Times today
and take a lot longer.
The committee saying delay of another 18 months and an extra 150 million. So it's not an option to walk away from BAM. Do BAM know this? Are BAM putting it up to you? Have they outmaneuvered you in the sense that the Taoiseach said certain things about unnamed people involved in this? He said that there was lowballing, which is that people come in with low prices and then jack it up cynically. And he also said there are companies he would like them not to get a state contract again. And if BAM come along now and said, well, fine, guys, you know, if that's your attitude, you didn't mention us, but you either say you're not mentioning us or we walk.
No,
BAM actually got the power here?
No, so it's two things. I mean, I think what the Taoiseach expressed was a frustration that a hell of a lot of us are feeling. Everyone wants to build a children's hospital, but everyone wants to make sure there's value for the taxpayer. And what Leo said is, you know, let's PwC do its work. And if any company didn't step up to the plate, or anybody didn't step up to the plate, let them face the consequences. He was not naming any company, right? I got someone said
he didn't come out and say that the statement from his spokesman last night did not say we weren't talking about BAM. And that's what BAM are looking for, isn't it?
The government is just commissioning.
BAM are saying, you express confidence in us, or we're happy to walk away. I'm sure there's plenty of work out there for BAM. This is a very difficult project. Sure. They're probably not making the kind of money they expected to make. Are you in trouble now for trying to subtly blame BAM?
No one's blaming anyone here. What people are saying is, including the Taoiseach, there's an inquiry. We've commissioned it. Can we let it actually look into the issues and see where it brings us? And by the way, when people hear inquiries, they probably think weeks.
You keep kicking everything into the inquiry. Have events not caught up with us now? If you have the main contractor saying, look, fine, we'll walk away.
No, because the inquiry will report next month. Someone sent me a photograph last night, a member of the public, at 10:15 walking by St. James's Hospital, people working on the site. People are talking about this children's hospital as though it's a concept for the future. It's being built today. BAM are on site building the hospital. Phase one is completed. Part of the hospital actually will open this summer, the Connolly part. The X-ray machine was delivered last week. So, like, this project
this is satellite.
It's all a part of it, you know. There's the James's part, there's the Connolly part, and there's the Tallaght part. BAM were awarded the contract. BAM say in their statement last night that they're getting on with the job and they remain committed to the contract.
Yeah.
They make a point that if the government or the state, because actually the power doesn't lie with the government, it lies with the hospital board. Yeah. If they wanted to walk away, they'd be happy to have that conversation.
Okay.
I'm happy for the project to continue. My priority
so you're
is
saying,
building
BAM,
this hospital.
No, we don't want you to walk away.
I want everybody to continue to do what they signed up to do. Build the hospital that's been promised for decades and the kids desperately need.
Okay. Does this mean, do you think, that the Taoiseach needs to come out and express some confidence in BAM and say, I was not talking about BAM?
No, I don't think the Taoiseach needs to do anything other than exactly what the Taoiseach has done, which is say, there's two things going on here. Building a hospital, the politicians have promised and failed to deliver for decades that we're going to deliver, that's so badly needed. And secondly, making sure that taxpayers get good value for money. And we will follow the evidence in relation to the PwC report. You don't ask a group of auditors to go in and look at a thing and then start putting out caveats and you know, apologies and clarifications in advance of it. So Leo said exactly what a lot of people are thinking out there. You know, we want to make sure there's good value here.
Are we not in a situation where the relationship between the government and the contractor on this now is toxic?
No, I don't believe it is. I don't believe it is, and I don't read that in the statement. I read in the statement a company saying, we won the contract, we're committed to delivering the project. If anyone wants us
and
to
we
step
want
off,
the
if anyone
and
wants
we want the Taoiseach to come out and say that it is not us he was talking
and
about when he suggested that people were lowballing contracts and that we should never get another contract again. We want the Taoiseach to say that's not us.
And the Taoiseach made very clear in his statement last night that he wasn't talking about any particular company, and the record of it all shows that.
So you're interpreting that as the Taoiseach saying that it was not BAM he was referring
he
to.
He wasn't referring to any specific company at all. He was making the point. We've had wall-to-wall.
He was referring to, he had specific companies in his head. He said there are one or two companies that I think shouldn't get a state contract again.
And did he name any of them? Did he name any of them?
But he clearly was referring to somebody, and BAM are saying, all we want you to do is say, you're not referring to us.
And then another company will come along and say, I want you to say you're not referring to us, and another one, I'm not referring to us.
You know what? I wouldn't blame them if they want that reassurance. Because BAM's name has been blackened around the place by this, hasn't it?
No, what's happened here is we've had wall-to-wall coverage and debate about procurement, about value for taxpayers' money, and about making sure processes are robust. And Leo Varadkar, as is his style, made the point that he wants answers, and if anybody's found to have not stepped up to the plate, there needs to be consequences. I fully agree with that. He's not talking about any individual company. My priority as Health Minister is seeing people build this hospital. I think it was first mentioned in the Dáil Briseadh in 1962 that it'd be a nice idea to build a national children's hospital. It's going to start opening part one of it this summer. We're going to deliver this hospital. There'll be parents listening to this interview maybe in Crumlin today. They've slept on a hard cold floor last night. Their kids are being really well looked after. We're going to make sure every child has a single ensuite room and a place for the parents to sleep. We've only got 14 children.
We all agree it'll be fantastic, but it's not good enough to just agree it.
We have to do it, we have to deliver it.
In
and that's
September,
what we're going to do.
The board of the hospital board said that BAM had fallen short of expectations and were not adequately resourced to do the job, correct?
I believe so from the minutes that have been published, yeah.
Okay, is that anything that filtered up to you that there was, that the, at that point, that there were problems with BAM?
You know, all of the documentation that I've received has been published at this stage. But the company...
Do you think BAM are doing a good job?
I'm happy as minister it's not my job to go around picking companies to do things, that there's very clear procurement laws in this. I'm happy that the board discharged its jobs properly in that regard and that the hospital's being built. And I do need to make the point, phase A of the hospital, which was all the excavation works, actually came in on budget. So what we have now here is...
But with concerns.
What we have now here, though, is we have a situation whereby I was presented with three options. Pause the project, delay it further, cost more money. Retender the project, delay it further, cost more money. Or build the project. And I brought the recommendation to government on the 18th of December and the government agreed, get on with it, do it, build it. It's important and that's what the priority has to be.
Okay, but you're not happy with the costs, clearly, on this project.
I think we have to really get to the bottom of this. I mean, I'm delighted we're investing in children's health and we'll do whatever we need to make sure this project is built. But we've got to make sure there's value for money. What I'm hearing from people as I go about my life and job and what I'm seeing on the emails that I get from constituents and the likes is two things. Will you please build it? And will you please make sure there's no money wasted? That's my commitment.
Are you happy there's no money being wasted?
That's the reason we commissioned the PwC report, to see is there any way of paring back the costs. And what I want people to know is, if there's any way of reducing costs that does not compromise what we're doing for the kids, we'll absolutely do it. And when people hear about inquiries, they rightly roll their eyes and go, here we go. We're talking here about a report that we'll get at the end of next month that we'll publish in full and that we'll act on the recommendations of.
Have you met the PwC people? Have they interviewed you?
They haven't.
Are you party to this report? Are they going to look at you and your department in it?
My department is certainly a party to it, and obviously everyone will cooperate with it fully, everyone better cooperate with it fully. The government's very clear, and I would too if they want to talk to me in relation to
anything. Are you expecting them to come and talk to you?
Not necessarily, because they seem to be looking at issues in relation to design, procurement, the role of the board, who knew what. I've published everything I knew, but I think I've answered 11 and a half hours of questions in the Dáil and at Rock. This committee's on it. And the great thing when you're telling the truth is that the answer doesn't change.
I was interested in the Dáil the other night that you seemed to slightly defer to Mick Wallace. You said, as someone who knows what he's talking about, his answers are very helpful. Mick Wallace says that it won't be built for 1.7, it won't be built for another half a billion, and that it won't stop at 2.2 either. So given you've accepted that Mick Wallace knows a lot more about... he has a checkered career, you could say, but he knows a lot more about this than I do. Should we be listening to him?
Well, look, I'm the sort of person who struggles with IKEA furniture. So, I mean, I take my advice in relation to construction from the experts that we put on the board. And we had a who's who in relation to the development board. People who've built major, major projects, accountants, people with financial expertise, who stepped up to the plate and said, we want to help deliver the hospital. I was making the point that Mick Wallace, who in fairness does know a fair bit about building, was suggesting that there were other and different ways of doing it. And what I said to Mick and the Dáil, and in fact I said to the entire opposition in the Dáil, when we published the report, we'd happily work with you on how we implement its recommendations. So I was simply making the point that you'd be silly to dismiss Mick Wallace's concerns.
But we are dismissing Mick Wallace's concerns.
No, we're not.
And we're moving on.
We're continuing with the project, and at the same time we're asking PwC to see if there's a way of reducing the cost. And if we can...
But Mick Wallace is saying stop retender. Under the current contract...
I can't agree with that based on the advice that's been given to me, but let's see where the PwC report brings us.
Do you think, and I know your answer is going to be no on everything, but it does make you think, you don't understand this project really, do you? The complexities of it, of the build and everything else.
As the health minister, I understand the health benefits of the project. That's my job.
Yeah.
That's my job. Like, if you're the minister for education building a school, it's not your job to work out how to build a school. It's your job to understand the policy benefits and to put the people in place to deliver it. We as a state have paid people to deliver this project. We've paid them a hell of a lot of money to deliver this project.
Isn't it a problem?
And that's an appropriate way. What frustrates me as health minister is we're finding it nearly impossible to find the time to talk about the health benefits of the project. And people are saying, sure, we all know the benefit of the new hospital. Well, if we know the benefit of the new hospital, why didn't people go out and build it years ago?
I suppose people are not questioning your knowledge of the minutiae of the building or anything, but I suppose the questions that have arisen have been about judgment. And you think about it, you look at someone like Mick Wallace, right? For better or worse, Mick Wallace, been out in the real world there, he's lived a little bit, he's come into politics armed with all that. You became a TD at 24, Minister for Health at 29. Would it have been better if you had lived a little bit
You're politely asking me, am I too young to do the job?
And inexperienced in life and the ways of the world, you know?
Yeah, this question really kind of amuses me somewhat, because it wasn't my generation that bankrupt the country, Brendan. So when you talk about experience, what do you want people to be experienced at? I mean, what I'm experienced at doing is, when my brother was born with autism and we couldn't access services in our country, bringing together people of a like mind to campaign for better facilities. What I'm now experienced at doing, as 3 years in the job with a hell of a lot more grey hair than I had when I started this job, is I'm experienced at working with civic society to help repeal the Eighth Amendment, taking a piece of law like the Public Health Alcohol Bill that had been opposed by so many vested interests, delayed for 1,000 days, and getting it passed. Showing an ability to work with the opposition to come up with a 10-year plan for our health service called Sláintecare. So, like, experience is not linked to age. It's linked to your values. It's linked to your judgment. I didn't get involved in politics through the traditional route at all.
In terms of judgment, let me ask you a question. You've been asked this before, but let me ask it in another way. Huh. Just you find out about all this in August, right? You become aware of this issue. Now, between August 27th and October 9th, the budget was?
Yeah, 10th of October was the budget,
10th of October. There's 6 weeks there where presumably there's a budget being put together. How many times did your officials meet with Pascal Donoghue's officials, for example, in that 6 weeks?
Quite a few. I don't know how many, but
a lot.
Several, yes, absolutely.
How many times did you yourself meet with Pascal Donoghue?
A number of times. Again, 3-4 bilateral meetings, I'd say.
Yeah. And you're sitting there, you're talking about estimates, money, budgets, everything. You're young. You don't want to say inexperienced. You're a young minister faced with this huge project. It appears to be spiraling out of control cost-wise. Would it not have been good judgment to just mention this to them? You're there talking about money. Your officials are meeting their guys all the time. So you have 3 or 4 bilaterals with him. And it almost sounds like an act of choice. I'm not going to tell him about this. Natural thing would be to say it.
So look, that's the key question. So let me answer it. No, it wasn't. It wasn't appropriate to discuss it at that time. And here's why. Capital budgets, so the budgets actually build stuff, had been decided for 4 years. So we were negotiating, and you'll remember because it was dominating the newspapers at the time, we were negotiating the current spending for health. We actually had a shortfall of about 600 million to keep the health services going. So day in, day out, that's what we were negotiating. The capital budgets, the budgets to build hospitals and the likes, had already been decided. You've seen from emails that have been produced that my officials were engaging with his officials, and that's the way this normally happens. Officials engage with officials. When they bottom it out, it then gets escalated to minister engaging with minister. And as he said himself, he being Pascal Donoghue, that even if he had known, he would have said, do exactly what you're doing. Find out the problem, quantify it and come back to me.
He also said it would have been helpful to know.
Yeah, but I agree it would have been helpful to know. It would have been helpful to know what the figure was at an earlier stage. That's the entire point. But I used the phrase on prime time, and I didn't mean it in a flippant way. But like, it's not the job of a minister to kind of just be a messenger boy, to find out a bit of partial information and to run and tell everyone. It's the job of a minister to make decisions. And I don't believe you make better decisions with partial information than you do with full information. So we did a huge amount of work between, as you say, end of August, start of September and November to get to the bottom of this, to scrutinise it, to consider all of the things I'm hearing people now say. Do you pause? Do you retender? How do you deal with this? And then when I had all the information, I discussed it with my government colleagues, and together we made a decision as a collective on the 18th of December to get on and build this hospital.
We have a lot of texts here. Will we read some of them?
Sure thing.
Regarding the protest, completely unacceptable. What about Simon Harris's wife's rights as a private citizen? Surely she can have it stopped. Brendan, Simon Harris still obviously doesn't understand that we the people are very upset that he has wasted over 2 billion and continues to deceive us. That's Shane in Wexford. Do you accept that?
Well, firstly 2 billion is a figure that is made up. The cost for the hospital is 1.4 billion. Wasted, I don't believe investing in children's healthcare and building a state-of-the-art hospital is wasted at all. I think politicians should have done this years ago, and I'm going to deliver it. I'm determined to deliver it. And if there's ways of reducing the cost, we'll do it. But we won't reduce the cost to compromise kids' health.
I disagree with the heavy-handed nature of the protest, but I do think that when policies the government make affect people's everyday lives, it's fair enough to protest at the homes of politicians, but it's not fair to target wives and children. That's despicable. Okay, you'll disagree with one half of that.
My wife and child live in the house, so you can't separate the two issues.
Yeah. Brendan, how about politicians who dehumanise the victims of this disastrous government? Simon Harris, sort this mess out, Mary says. Don't be looking for sympathy. Now, here's one from Emer in Donegal. My husband is a single-handed rural GP, and after my fourth baby, he took me home from hospital when the baby was a day old, but had to go into work the next day. But the Minister for Health wants special time off work.
Not at all. The Minister for Health is only making the point that politicians keep on saying we need to make the dole more family friendly, as the first in a while to be in cabinet and to become a father, and just making the point that the reality didn't match that.
Frank says time for Mr. Harris to resign. In private industry, he would be gone.
We're not in private industry, we're in public service. I'm trying to build a better health service. And I mean, the easiest thing I've been reflecting in the last while, that probably the easiest way to get through the Department of Health politically is keep your head down and do nothing. Keep your head down, muddle through the place and hope that you get reshuffled somewhere else. That's not who I am. It's not why I got involved in politics.
Because there was a suggestion that you were keeping quiet on the hospital overruns because you thought it was going to be the next Minister for Health's problems, that there was going to be an election, that you were one of the people pushing for an election.
It's kind of preposterous though, isn't there? Because nearly every week, certainly every couple of weeks since I've become Health Minister, people have said there might be an election, so you'd do nothing if that was the case. The reality of the situation is I took the decision when Enda Kenny appointed me Health Minister. I took the decision, I now have a chance to make a difference, to get things done. We're not going to boil the ocean. We're not going to be able to fix every problem, but there are real things we can do to make a difference in people's lives. And when you take on some of those big challenges, and delivering this hospital is a big challenge, repealing the eighth is a big challenge, changing our law on organ donation will be a big challenge, the new GP contract is a big challenge, but they're challenges worth doing. And, you know, I won't be doing this job forever, but every day I'm in it, I come into work saying, how can we get another little bit done? And that's, that might make life politically difficult at times, but it's the way I want to approach it.
You say about that you didn't want to operate on partial information and rush into anything in terms of telling anybody about the potential overruns in the hospital. It could be argued that the response to the cervical check controversy, that there was an element of panicking there when you offered that repeat screening to women who were concerned. That now we know has led to a backlog of, is it 80, 90,000? People are waiting months for results. So huge anxiety out there again. Does that, was that not an example of acting half-cocked off bad information, acting maybe emotively or acting...
There's a bit of serious revisionism going on at the moment where everybody is now talking about the cervical check debacle from a distance. Everyone's now talking about it from higher terrain, thankfully. Let's not forget what happened that day and that week. You know, let's not forget Vicky Phelan, someone I've become a friend of, who, you know, stood on the steps of the High Court, and Vicky had, through her own courage, unearthed something that shocked and scared not just Vicky Phelan, but women right throughout the country. When I spoke to Vicky, I remember phoning her from my home and having a conversation with her, I think it was a Thursday or Friday morning. When I spoke to Vicky, the only thing Vicky asked for was that some good would come from this. And Vicky's situation was something that caused worry for lots of women. They felt that they had a health service that did not care for them. And that was my jumping off point in every decision I made, not to be a bureaucrat, but to try and show that we cared, and to care, by the way, to actually care. One of the big issues coming up time and time again, one of the main calls into the helpline, the cervical check helpline, was from women and indeed from GPs saying, can a woman have a repeat smear test? Women were going to turn up at their doctors looking for reassurance because the state could not provide them with that reassurance. The issue was, were we going to add insult to injury and say, put your hand in your pocket and pay for it as well? And I took the decision after being requested to do so by so many women and indeed by GP organisations that women shouldn't have to pay for this. Yes, it has added to a backlog, but it's not the only part of the backlog. Let's remember, about a third of that backlog may be from new women opting in to the service for the first time ever. You saw this happen in the UK as well after Jade Goody's tragic passing, that women started getting screened for the first time who hadn't in the past. But this idea that if we hadn't have offered the free test, women wouldn't have wanted the reassurance and sought the smear test themselves doesn't hold up to scrutiny. It's not what women have told me. The decision was made for a good reason. It was made in consultation with my officials. It was made in consultation with the chief medical officer. And that was the rationale behind it. Now, of course,
You have discussed it with Tony O'Brien?
Well, you've got to remember the very frenzied environment that people were operating in. My big regret at the time, as I think you've kind of hinted at that in your question, I mean, my big regret at the time was that I perhaps didn't call for space, for time to actually ascertain all of the facts and all of the information. Being honest, I'm not sure I would have gotten it, right? Such was the frenzy and the panic and the worry. But that's certainly what I've learnt as a minister, the importance of everyone taking a deep breath and getting to the bottom of things. But what I'm not sorry for is not becoming a bureaucrat or a robot here. People were frightened. People were worried. And we, as a state and the cervical check screening programme, couldn't provide women with assurance. Nobody could go on the radio and say, there aren't more Vicky Phelans. Now, thankfully, now we have the Dr. Gabriel Scally report. It's done brilliant work. Gabriel has been superb. He's been able to provide women with assurance in relation to the safety of our screening programme. And when he was able to provide that assurance, we immediately moved to suspend the free smear tests at the date of the HSE's choosing. But, you know, people are talking about this with the benefit of hindsight.
Did you discuss it with Grainne Flannelly?
I didn't discuss it with Grainne Flannelly. I took my medical advice from the chief medical officer, and I think that's the appropriate person to take your advice from.
She was in charge of all this. Would you not have discussed it with her?
You've got to remember, and I don't wish in any way to make this personal whatsoever, but you've got to remember that I had lost confidence in the people running cervical check. I made that very clear. I couldn't have confidence in the people running cervical check because they couldn't actually communicate to women and say there are more cases. They couldn't say how many people were affected. They couldn't provide basic answers. And quite frankly, they'd botched the audit and they left women wondering about their own medical audits. They had a situation where they had told doctors if the woman had passed away to just put a note on her file. So I had lost confidence in the management of cervical check. I actually sent in a new team of people to run cervical check. So you can see why I was taking my advice from the chief medical officer and from my officials and from the new team I'd put in charge, not from the team that I think had lost not just my confidence, but I think had lost the confidence of the people of Ireland.
Tony O'Brien referred to you as a frightened little boy, weak and running scared of headlines. He was a guest on the show last week. He didn't take back what he said. How do you respond to that?
Well, I have a lot of time for Tony, by the way. No matter what he says, I think he's, I think he had a very tough time, and I think he achieved a lot. Like all of us, we can all make mistakes from time to time. It was a frightening time, Brendan. It was a very frightening time. Women in this country were scared. They were worried and they were frightened. And
were you frightened?
And I worried. And that worry did reflect on me. It absolutely did. I mean, I'm a human being. I was worried. I was worried that we weren't as a country able to provide basic answers to reassure people. I think lots of people made mistakes. I've talked about the ones I made. I think there were mistakes in media coverage of it. I think there were mistakes in the political environment and the way it was handled. I think the general mistake was people didn't allow someone like Dr. Scally come in, do his work and provide that information. But I'm also satisfied we got a hell of a lot of things right in terms of how we responded with compassion. And I've been honoured and humbled to meet probably 100 people impacted by this. I had a very big meeting in my department recently for a number of hours. And to have heard the harrowing personal intimate details that women have shared with me, these are things that stay with you and they do affect your decision-making process. And I think when people put you into public office, they expect you to act with emotion and with empathy and compassion.
Okay, a text here. Brendan, please ask Simon Harris about Mr. Jimmy Sheehan and his offer to build a hospital. What's his response to that?
We've obviously had a very long deliberative process about the hospital. The hospital's underway and I just want to get on with it. Like, it's a thing in Ireland. It's a thing in Ireland that we debate where to put something forever and a day. Bertie was going to put it on the Matter site. He was a guest in this studio a few weeks ago and I heard him explain, in fairness, in a lot of detail, the process that went in there. 40 million was put into that site. The hospital was never built. Other people thought it should be in Connolly. Other people thought it should be in James's. Other people thought it should be in their county, their town, their village. Politics is about making decisions and that decision is now made and we need to get on and deliver the hospital because kids can't wait no longer.
Another text, did the protest make Simon consider resigning his ministry at any stage?
No, it didn't. It didn't, but it did make me feel in a very deep way, in a way that does give you a sense of guilt, I suppose, as the personal impact that politics can have on your family.
Now, in terms of you and your ministry, Sinn Féin tabling a motion of no confidence next week, potentially anyway.
Yeah, no, it's on Wednesday.
On Wednesday, okay. You obviously feel that your overseal of all this is not a resigning matter.
Well, I obviously feel that, you know, accountability is not about walking away from challenges. I think this will be the 7th motion of no confidence Sinn Féin have tabled or threatened to table in a minister or a senior official since the last general election. So, you know, Kel Sabrese, it's a set piece they do. It won't help build the hospital. I'm very satisfied that there's lots of challenges in health, but that we're also making progress in a lot of areas.
Do you think if Brexit wasn't going on, that Fianna Fáil might have come after you as well and that you could be gone by now?
I think if Brexit wasn't going on, we'd be in a very different political environment overall. But I tell you, whenever the day a general election does come about, I'm looking forward to the opportunity of debating my record in health and comparing it to the record of others who've been there before me.
Do you think you enjoy the confidence of the Taoiseach at the moment?
Well, I don't think that's a question that arises. I think it's clear that I do. The Taoiseach appointed me to cabinet. In fact, he reappointed me to cabinet after he became leader of our party. And I'm working very closely with him and I'm getting stuff done.
So tell me, are you confident now that is the hospital going to be built on your watch?
It is. Now, whether I'll be there to open the hospital is another matter, because the hospital is scheduled to open in 2023. But what would be a scandal here? What would be a real scandal? Because the word scandal gets thrown around a lot in Irish politics and media these days. What would be a scandal is having spent 200 and something million euro on a hospital so far not to build it, and to actually allow children be collateral damage here in a situation regarding a political spat. We have to build this hospital. There's no going back. Bricks are on top of bricks at the James's site. The Connolly part will open this year. And I know when it opens, like so many other things, like the Lewis, like the Port Tunnel, like Terminal 2, when this opens, people will stand inside it and wonder why we didn't do this years ago.
OK, let's talk about the nurses. Did the government back down here, cave in?
No, but this was a big challenge, Brendan, because the public clearly supported the nurses and midwives. I support them, we all support them, we all think they do an incredible job. Everybody wanted to do something to help them, and the public were very clear that they wanted to see them supported. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, we have a deal, an agreement, a pay agreement with about 290,000 public servants, other people that work really hard, teachers, guards, postman, you know, porters, lots of people working throughout the public service. We had to find a way of helping the nurses address some of their issues without tearing up that agreement, and particularly without tearing up that agreement 40 odd days before Brexit. That was, I think I described it as a tightrope, and I think that summed it up. It took us a fair few days to work our way through it. Have to say, in fairness to the leadership of the nurses' organisations, the INMO, they really stepped up. They came up with innovative solutions. Patricia King and ICTU worked for innovative solutions, and our own teams, Pascal Donoghue's team and my team, worked really hard. And I think what we have now is something that will be good for nurses. One of the big elements of the deal is that once you've become a nurse for 4 years, you can move on to basically a new scale in return for doing other duties. I think what's attractive about that is we know we lose a lot of our nurses to Melbourne and the likes. If you're now a young nurse, 2 or 3 years in the health service, you might say, geez, actually, if I stay another year now, I can benefit from this. So I really hope it helps with the retention piece. I think there's a lot of exciting and good elements for it. From my perspective, it's good for health policy, but it was a very challenging time.
You're confident there isn't going to be a queue of other public sector unions?
Obviously, every union needs to now consider it, but I'm confident that the agreement is in line with the public service stability agreement, and that was the balance we were trying to achieve.
Back to politicians being human beings, you're obviously over the breakfast table every day.
Yeah.
You're facing a nurse. when you were on this programme in 2016, you told us about your insight into how hard nurses work.
Yeah.
That gives you, you spoke about long shifts, how they never finish on time, the emotional impact of people working in health.
Yeah.
And then you're sitting in a cabinet and you're effectively forcing them out on strike, you could say. Did it cause any conflict in your house?
I thought you might ask me this question, so I asked my wife what she thought the answer was this morning. So, I mean, first thing, I'm not a spokesperson.
Good plan.
I'm not a spokesperson for her, and she's not a public figure. But I think two things. I mean, one, I think we were both relieved she was on maternity leave. So that's family planning at its best. She was on maternity leave during the strike. Second thing was, she said, you're lucky you didn't ask me to choose between you and my friends and colleagues in recent weeks. So look, Kiva knows, and I know, how hard nurses work. We don't really mix our work lives. She's no interest in politics and keeps herself to herself in that regard. But I'm certainly glad it's resolved. I'd say she is as well.
Minister for Health, Simon Harris, thank you very much.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.